You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I don't think I need to tell you guys, we're in a very weird year across the world, and now more than ever, it's important for us to support local businesses. One of the reasons that we were so eager to partner with Rubach Fine Jewelry is because they're local, and they've been an integral part of Kansas City for over 100 years. They've supported this city and numerous Chiefs legends that have been Rubach customers for decades. It's getting close to that holiday season, and Hal, the owner of Rubach, is here to help you in any way he possibly can. They've set up a safe appointment-only environment so that you can shop for whatever jewelry needs you might have in a quiet environment. You can even set up a FaceTime or a phone consultation. You will have Hal's full attention when you come into Rubach, and I know firsthand that it's a no-pressure environment. He'll teach you as much or as little as you want to know about the process, and he will work to stay in your budget, not push you in a direction that you don't want to go. Your dollar will go farther with Rubach. I mean, they make their own jewelry and can pass savings on to you. Set up your appointment before the holidays get here by going to rubach.co/appointments. and experience the most comfortable, relaxed jewelry buying process you have ever seen. What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us today. Kent Swanson, Arrowhead Pride, Raido Week. I am so fired up about this game. I cannot wait for this week. It feels good to have that kind of energy about a game. This football team's just been running through everybody under the sun for the last two seasons. And there's a little bit of a chip on Kansas City's shoulder. It's a bus-sized chip. And here to help me talk about that and more are my dear pals. First, find them on Twitter at ChiefInCarolina. Maddie Lane, let's go.
Well, while Kent's over here talking about eating potato chips and relocating buses of pirates from one western state to another, I'm just thinking, even on coming off the bye week, the Chiefs are over here making national headline news by signing cornerback DeAndre Baker to the practice squad. Craig, if I'm not mistaken, you wrote him up for the KC draft guide, no?
Yeah, I did. I was also the lowest grade of anybody in the KC draft guide on DeAndre Baker, but he was a first-round draft pick. We had a third-round grade, expected him to get drafted in the second, but was at the very bottom of the first there. Is a good guy to have as depth on the roster, especially a practice squad move. I think that was something that we all knew was a possibility, but I don't think any of us really expected that that was going to be the move. I think we expected a little more interest than that for DeAndre Baker, but comes over here after a tumultuous offseason that has since been proven to not be factual. So we'll see what the Chiefs get out of him, but Kent, what are your feelings on DeAndre Baker?
I wasn't a big DeAndre Baker fan. I was the second lowest grader in the KC draft guy. I still had a third round grade on him. I did have questions about the athletic profile, and there was a lot of buzz about character concerns just littered, you know, throughout the draft process back then.
Just to be clear, this is before all of the stuff that we're talking about this offseason. Yeah, this is before he was drafted. There were a lot of character concerns. So please go on, Ken. I just wanted to make that abundantly clear.
It's important. And that's part of why, we don't grade when we're trying to grade. We don't take character into consideration our grade. We will notate it in the KC draft guide and let you know, hey, there has been, for instance, some injury concerns or some character concerns. But before all this, there was not glowing reviews about Baker. But low risk, no risk move, really. signing him to the practice squad. And here's the interesting thing. If I'm understanding this correctly, and I believe I am, the Chiefs will have club control of DeAndre Baker as an exclusive rights free agent in 2021. That means they can sign him to a league minimum. And if they offer that contract to him, he has to sign it. So the Chiefs could theoretically have club control of a very young corner still, 23 years old. I think there is it's a no risk, high reward move, on a guy that, you know, I didn't love, but, like, you know, what are you going to do? Maddie, overall thoughts on this?
Well, since we're all over here peacocking around about having the lowest DeAndre Baker draft grade, I had the highest DeAndre Baker draft grade among the KC Draft Guide writers. And funnily enough, I think if you talk to any of us without seeing the numbers, you would come away thinking I was by far the lowest on him and yet had the highest grade on him.
Can confirm. Like, you hated him. Well, hated the player.
So that is where we stand. I was going to say on this podcast, before this news happened, this news literally dropped as we were preparing to start recording this podcast for you guys right now. I was going to say that the only way I would be okay with signing DeAndre Baker was to the practice squad, because I think that with his off-field issues and what I have heard about him coming into the NFL from people that got to talk to him from his time at Georgia, what's gone on with the Giants since he's been in the NFL this offseason, I would only be comfortable signing him to the practice squad. I didn't even want him to take the place of a guy that only plays on special teams like Thakarius Keys or Armani Watts. I would rather see those guys play on the 53-man roster than DeAndre Baker at this point in time. So signing him to the practice squad would be the only way that I was okay with signing him, that I was happy about it. Didn't think it was a realistic possibility. I thought somebody else in the NFL would want him on their actual roster because he was, while we didn't love him, there's a lot of people out there that did think he was a top 50, top 75 type pick that I assumed somebody would want to sign him. They didn't. Chiefs got him on the practice squad. According to Mike Garofolo, according to Terrez Paylor, it looks like the plan is going to be to elevate him to the 53-man roster as he gets familiar. We'll see how that goes. But I am okay with the move of bringing him in. I think we'll let Craig kind of dig in on his fit with this Chiefs secondary, because I think the write-up says that he's not the best fit, but I almost think the way the Chiefs have transitioned their defensive scheme this year in the secondary, it maybe works a little bit better with playing a little bit more cover two this year, but we'll let Craig go into town on that.
Yeah, they've definitely played a little more cover two this year. They've definitely played a little more press. Spagnuolo has felt a little more comfortable getting up there, getting hands on guys, and it's worked well for Bashaud Breeland, Charvarius Ward, and L'Jarius Sneed. Those, and Rashad Fenton. I don't mean to exclude him. He's been good on the outside as well. That's what DeAndre Baker's forte is. It's press man. He isn't the fastest guy on the field. As a matter of fact, he and Rashad Fenton are almost dead even in a foot race, and that's not necessarily a good thing, but it is a situation where Baker's got good ball skills, he is good in press man, and he's very physical. We know that Spagnuolo likes guys like that, which is why I couldn't ever fully rule out the fact that the Chiefs may want to go get him, but he is short. He's not particularly long, and he's not fast, like I said. We've seen guys like L'Jarius Sneed, Bo Peete, Keys, these guys that have come in that have been priorities for Spagnuolo. They've added a lot of athletes in the secondary. Even Juan Thornhill was a super athlete in the secondary. They've definitely wanted a lot more top-end traits at those positions specifically. So I really did wonder what DeAndre Baker's fit was. I do think that he could fit as a boundary. He was not good as a boundary corner last year for the Giants. He almost equaled what Charvarius Ward and Bashaud Breeland did combined last year just by himself when targeted. But he does kind of match up some of the profile of Fenton. If they want another guy on the inside that they feel more comfortable playing press man, knowing that he's going to be able to fit in the box, be able to come downhill, you know, really fit in run support, which he can, then he's a guy that makes some sense. The only problem with that is they asked Rashad Fenton to drop into coverage, drop as a deep safety a lot in that slot drop, kind of two invert look, and that is not DeAndre Baker's forte. He is not particularly good in zone, so going to be more of a man-heavy press man corner. We'll see how they use him. I do like adding him to the practice squad and having him get integrated, though.
All right, let's jump into the show. Because it's Raiders week, we got a lot of questions to answer. We got to start with the 5-star reviews, though. And I do want to shout out Bushwag for saying he loves everything about the pod other than constantly having to adjust the volume to keep Kent's prepubescent screaming from blowing out my ears. So shout out to Bushwag for that. Alex, the ATC, do you expect L'Jarius Sneed to start over Charvarius Ward when he comes off the IR? Do I expect it? No. Do I wish it was happening? Yes. L'Jarius Sneed has outplayed Charvarius Ward this year, and I don't know how close it's been particularly. So I would like to see L'Jarius Sneed on the field more than Charvarius Ward. I don't think it will happen. I will be pleasantly surprised if it does, and I think it's the right move. Swanson's Buffon, Turk Wharton. I realize it may be a tad much to ask if he's a poor man's Aaron Donald. Could he be a rich man's Ed Oliver?
I think that Ed Oliver is the actual poor man's Aaron Donald, and that Tershawn Wharton is the, like, really poor man's Aaron Donald, I think would be a better way to go about it. But yeah, I mean, you're looking at the guys in a similar mold. I do think kind of what separates Aaron Donald from the rest of the guys is that he's as strong as a guy that's 350 pounds, but yet still faster than anybody else his size, still quicker, and then he has, obviously, excellent hand technique and just everything, balance, power, strength, so on and so forth. Ed Oliver's not quite as strong. The technique isn't quite as refined, but he has that same level of agility. He still is very strong for his size, whereas Wharton's still trying to bring around just about every aspect of the technique. His timing is a little wonky. He just kind of looks like a guy that's going out there trying to out-athlete people with the same move over and over again. It's like, I'm not saying he can't get to near Ed Oliver's level, but I do think there is just a gap in the general athleticism that Ed Oliver has over Tershawn Wharton. And then you add in the fact that Oliver's already advanced, technically speaking. You know, they're not quite close yet, but similar concepts of players.
When I first read it, I thought, poor man's Ed Oliver actually works really well. So, like, I'm dead on with you, Maddie. Ephus said some really nice things, called us the champagne of podcasts, which, thank you, Ephus. Here's his question. How should I approach venturing away from a steady diet of basically just... Oh, this was for Craig, by the way. How should I approach venturing away from a steady diet of basically just light beers my entire life to dipping my toes into sampling all the different types and styles out there? Just go wild and blindly stab at everything, or is there a good progression to take? Again, thanks for all the amazing work.
Everybody's palate is a little bit different, so what works for somebody may not work for you, but I typically recommend people coming off of light beers, you know, North American light lagers, go to wheats, farmhouses, saisons, you know, things like that that are a little bit more lighter, not heavy bodied, but still have a little bit more flavor, and then slowly progress into like some milder IPAs. If you feel like trying a Gosa, that is a very light sour, something that you can maybe get involved in there, and then slowly progress through, you know, more aggressive IPAs, porters, stouts, or you can just go all the way and pick the biggest Russian Imperial stout that you can find and just try and chew your beer for your first real experience into, you know, major craft beers.
All right, Twitter time. Let's go to Techno Brad. We got some really nice little shade type questions. Who will be the first Chiefs player to reference the bus incident in the game, and how would they do it? My money would be on Honey Badger with some extreme smack talk involving a bus.
Oh, it's Travis Kelce, 100%. The first big play Kelce has, especially if he ends up getting a touchdown early in the game, he is absolutely hitting the bus driver dance. I have zero doubts in my mind that he is going to get up there in that bus driver seat. He's going to open up the door, wave on the Raiders sideline to come on the bus, and then drive on away. Hands down.
Yeah, if Kelce gets an opportunity to make a big play early, it's definitely him, unequivocally. If the defense comes out first, it might be Frank Clark. Now, you're not going to hear it if it's Frank Clark, because the things that he's going to say are, you know, not broadcastable for, you know, CBS or Fox, or this is NBC this week. But it is going to be Frank Clark. He is going to be yapping as much as he can and reminding Derek Carr that he's not going to be able to go deep on this Chiefs defense again. And it's going to be glorious, and I'm here for it. I can't wait for Sunday.
I could see Chris Jones's hands being on the wheel. I think it's gonna be a team touchdown celebration where the guy that scores like pulls up like up to the rest of the team and then he loads them all on the bus and then they kind of just follow each other all the way down the end zone, all the way around the Roomba. Right, ready, aim, lion. If you could design any play called Bus Victory Lap, what would it look like and why would it involve Chris Jones?
Oh, it's just all Chris Jones. Everybody else is evacuating the field, and Chris Jones is just pretending to drive a bus around all 100 yards of the field. He's just going to trace the sidelines, go all the way around, and about halfway around, you're going to be like, man, is this really going to continue? And about three-quarters of the way around, you're really going to appreciate it again.
So mine does involve a defensive player, but it's not Chris Jones. I would get Ben Neiman on the field as part of the offensive team because he's probably my least favorite player on the Chiefs. He's probably the guy that provides the least, much like the Raiders. And then he would just run an orbit motion for like 40 straight seconds around Patrick Mahomes, just circling Patrick Mahomes over and over and over. And I don't really care what happens post-snap because we're definitely going to score, but we're just going to have Ben Neiman be in the Raiders bus going round and round pre-snap for 40 seconds.
Chris Jones and Colin Saunders on the option. Let's go. All right, Chandler W78. So are we going to see the Tershawn Wharton behind the back pass to Nick Kaiser this week? No response required. That's just a little bit of swag. D Silky 10, who is your least favorite Raider and why is it Jonathan Abram? This is going to get me triggered because my least favorite Raider is hands down Jonathan Abram. He pretends
like Hang on.
He's...
Before you get started, I'm going to turn down your levels like significantly here. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
there you go. You go right ahead.
Sorry. Shout out to Bushwag.
Talk deep. Talk with a deep voice.
I don't know if I can. Look, Jonathan Abrams acts like he's done something in this league, and he hasn't. My man got up after giving up a big play down the field and getting a pass interference call on Tyreek Hill that didn't get called and celebrated like he did something. My man is the most – he's Jonathan Cyprian if Jonathan Cyprian was taken in the first round. He's reckless. He's dumb on the field. I'm not trying to discredit the man as a person, but he is stupid on the field. He is a reckless football player. He's going to get his team killed. He's going to get he's going to get other teams hurt. And I have zero respect for his game. I have zero respect for his game. He acts like he's and the man was trying to put on a show on Hard Knocks. My man was trying to have a Jessica Simpson, is this chicken or is this fish moment by trying to pronounce salmon wrong. It's salmon, Jonathan Abram. You know it's salmon. Everyone knows it's salmon. No one's ever called it salmon, but you just wanted to get attention because that's what your whole shtick is. You play like your injuries are bigger than they are. You sit there rolling around on the field and then you run off the field like you're okay. Of course you do because you love the attention. Jonathan Abram loves himself some Jonathan Abram, and that's why he does all the stupid stuff on the field. It's because he just wants all that attention. He is the perfect villain for this football team, and I cannot wait for that box safety to get roasted by Tyreek Hill three times because my man cannot hang deep. He has to be running around in the box. He has to be trying to make plays in the line of scrimmage because the only thing he's good at, and he's not even good at it. Craig? Go shop at Ruback, everyone.
Yes, please go shop at Ruback. Mine is not Jonathan Abram because Jonathan Abram is actually kind of good at football. Mine is Derek Carr. Derek Carr is not good at football. Derek Carr sucks. And Derek Carr whines to literally everybody that he can about how much he sucks and blocks people on Twitter and then gets his brother to come on and whine about how much he sucks and how much people hate him.
Can my favorite Raider or my least favorite Raider be David Carr?
Oh.
What about Darren?
David. Sorry. Continue, Craig.
They're all bad. He is not a good football player. The Chiefs dared him to throw deep for the first time in their life, and he got lucky. He got lucky this past time that
Charvarius
they played.
Ward.
Charvarius Ward had a bad game, and they took advantage of it. Kudos. He sucks, and he's going to come back to earth. Not Charvarius Ward. Derek Carr sucks, and he's going to come back to earth, and this is just going to be the game that the Chiefs are going to beat them down, because you know that Derek Carr was sitting right next to John Gruden, who was like, hey, let's take another lap around. Like, one was good, but we should do two, just cause. Derek Carr sucks.
mean, I would concur that Jonathan Abram, I like Jonathan Abram, actually. I love his play style. Like, I agree that it's reckless, but I love the energy. I like that he brings it. I also agree he's a great villain. He is like Ronnie Harrison for those Patriots teams. Like, he flies around, he does crazy stuff, and like, when you're playing him, you hate it, but when you have no investment in their game, you're like, yeah, okay, I wish a guy like that was on my team. Like, if Ben Neiman played with half that level of energy, I would be really excited at all times. So Jonathan Abram's not even close. Mine is Derek Carr is the easy answer because, you know, like, he cried on the field and he's, you know, not good at football, as Craig so elaborately said. But I'm going to go with Max Crosby because you all think he's good. Because you all get impressed when he gets unblocked sacks. Because you all are impressed when a backup tight end gets beat after 4.5 seconds of trying to block Max Crosby. Because you all think that he chases down a quarterback rolling out to his side, that he's good at football. There is a reason Max Crosby has seen a great regression this year. Teams are like, oh, I guess he's competent enough to run in a straight line. Maybe we should block him with an offensive lineman. And guess what? Max Crosby's doing a whole lot of not much else.
Wow, there's a lot of built-up angst here. Noticeable angst amongst all us. That was really cathartic, if I'm being honest.
Oh, and Damon Arnett. Shout out to Damon Arnett, but like, he can't get on the field. I mean, I don't mean to make fun of a guy's injury, but I don't think he's good enough to get on the field anyway. So like, shout out to him, but I don't know if he counts.
There's like a legit people. I don't know how many people understand from draft season. There is a legit feud between Damon Arnett and Matt Lane because Matt called him the other cornerback at Ohio State and said he wasn't a good athlete. And then all of Ohio State Twitter, even Brian Hartline, the wide receivers coach at Ohio State, jumped in and like, you guys will see. You'll see. You'll see what kind of athlete he is. And then what did he do?
Ran
at the combine?
Slow. He ran really, really slow.
He came in with really tiny arms and ran really slow.
And the Raiders still took him in the top 20. I love the Raiders. Like, it's so good to hate them again. Like, they finally did something to poke the bear. You poke the bear, you get the bus, though. This is going to be a fun game. We're not even game previewing yet. But you already know, the Chiefs are going to beat the brakes off the Raiders on national television, and Andy's going to be insufferable. It's going to be delightful. And we're actually, yo, by the way, you know what? You know who else is my least favorite Raider? Raider Cody. That guy is the Jonathan Abram of just irrational confidence for not being good at it. So there's another one, Raider Cody.
We made it through like 18 least favorite Raiders, and nobody mentioned Richie Incognito.
Man, that's got to tell you something, right?
The dude that tried to cut his dad's dead dad's head off. That's still my most interacted with tweet. I muted that thing immediately because everybody apparently found out about it at the same time. Yikes.
We just spent 5 minutes on Raiders we don't like.
Got to be Raiders week.
Fun.
Love it.
Added Hunter Renfro because he's like Craig's age.
And he's like an accountant. Like, I think, like, Craig has a more muscular body than Hunter Renfro. And somehow Hunter Renfro's out here getting catches.
Wait a second. Why are you going to come at Craig like that?
Craig knows. Look, me and Ben Neiman, I mean, I'm not trying to say I'm, like, an Adonis. Like, me and Ben Neiman are very, like, very dad bodish, too. So, I'm just saying. We should probably move on. This thing's getting out of hand. And Rebarcheck. Who is the best Sammy Watkins comp in the draft, and will he likely be on the board when the Chiefs pick at 32?
This is a tough one. I wanted to say Rashad Bateman, but I don't think he has enough speed to be a Sammy Watkins comp. Like, the problem is, guys Sammy Watkins size that run as fast as Sammy Watkins, that have the elite talent that he does on any given play, the elite physical talent, are never available at 32. I'd say your best comp is actually Ja'Marr Chase. I think if I was going to compare one guy, it would probably be Chase, and he might not even be as fast as Watkins, but I think that's probably where I would draw the best comparison. I do think somebody like Chris Olave has the ability to play in a similar way, but like, it's weird because Sammy Watkins, at his best, is one of the most physically talented wide receivers in the NFL. Like, it's not even questionable. His size, his strength, his ability to run routes, his hands, his speed. It's not, you can't match it with very many people in the NFL. So trying to pick out a draft prospect that might be that is very rare. You don't get one every single season. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody here, but the issue with Watkins is just a lack of consistency. That's why the Chiefs, I do think, need to move on.
It's lack of consistency and injury. But I don't think people appreciate what peak, playoff Sam, what peak Sammy Watkins is special. There's a reason he went in the top five. He's just his peaks are special, elite special. He's very hard to comp, legitimately. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more of your questions right after this.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. What? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, "Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back." If I'm not out in 3 minutes, dog, she's knocking on the door going, "Everything okay in there?" "Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog."
Continuing to answer your questions on Twitter, Doyle asks, do you think the defense will play a better game than they did in the first matchup against the Raiders?
Unquestionably. I think that this is the easiest question that I've gotten to answer all year. Charvarius Ward had a very lackluster game, and it wasn't from necessarily a technique standpoint, although that wasn't particularly good. I know we talk a lot about Ward's ceiling. Ward is a player. Ward is typically a good effort player. You don't ever really question about, the stuff that he's doing on the field. He is a guy that tries really hard. Against the Raiders, it seemed like the complete opposite. I think lots of people noted that it seemed like he was jogging, he seemed like he either wasn't healthy, something was going on there. There were lots of rumors out after the game about him. Guys, I don't expect that kind of performance out of him again, frankly. And I think that that is enough of a tide turner for this defense. The big plays that the Raiders have were the reason why they were in that game. It's not like they significantly controlled the clock. There were a lot of explosive plays, and a lot of them were right at Charvarius Ward. Charvarius Ward trying harder, being more clicked in, like we've seen him since then. This isn't, asking him to go back to a 2019 level of play. I'm saying this year we have seen it. He just needs to be locked in, and I don't think that that's going to be a problem. These guys definitely have a little bit of that, we need to put it on these guys sort of mentality. And, you hear it from Andy. Andy is a mouthpiece for that locker room. He's saying stuff like that because they're saying stuff like that. I think that that defense is going to be locked in. I think the pass rush is going to be significantly better, especially Chris Jones, who didn't really have a great game that first one either. I just think you're going to see an overall significantly better performance out of the Chiefs defense.
Gregory Mack, 11. This one is specifically for Matt PFF Vanquisher Lane. Matt's getting a reputation. PFF has constantly slided several Chiefs players. Cough, Frank Clark, cough. Recently, they have seemingly been playing down Patrick Mahomes' season and seem very against him being an MVP frontrunner. What are your thoughts, Maddie?
I mean, I agree with what you're saying here. The funny thing is, I decided that before the season, one of my bits this year was going to be debunking, not even like with real facts, just debunking with random tweets things that the analytics community says, because sometimes I feel like they're just throwing numbers at the wall. And not just me, I'm not going to say it's because of me, but I feel like a lot of people have done that. And some people, like PFF this year, seem to be getting like desperate for clicks afterwards. So I feel like they are doing anything they can to get people interested in what's being said. Hence why you get like four straight days of, oh, hey, Patrick Mahomes is good, but not that good, but not bad, but kind of bad. And like, there's 0 point to any of it that's going around right now. It's all subjective opinions trying to bring down what he's done so far, because they're trying to get more people to drive into what they're trying to put out there, which is a great business model. But at the end of the day, everybody that's watching football right now knows that Patrick Mahomes is the clear-cut MVP frontrunner right now. It's not even questionable. Even trying to go on Twitter thread rampages on why that's the case is just crazy. And then as far as like Frank Clark, I actually think his grade the last few weeks has probably been very well-deserved, and no matter how low it was, because I don't think he's been great. But I think the issue is to start the year, there was clearly some kind of bias going on. He was having great games, whether you want to look at the stats, whether you want to look at the impact, listen to what the opposing coaches said. He was having great games, getting bad grades. I do think there's a little bit of a bias from the people or person that are grading the game going and say, hey, I don't like Frank Clark. Or, hey, I don't like that the Chiefs traded for Frank Clark and then paid him. Let's go ahead and grade him poorly, whether they mean to or not. That's the only explanation I can come up with some of the stuff they do. But again, at the end of the day, they have their rubric, their grading rubric that says, hey, this is what we're following. They do that. Just don't take it for fact. Just because PFF says it doesn't mean that it's true. Watch it for yourself. Find other people that watch the same stuff that maybe are willing to show you their work. Then make your own opinion. Trust whoever you want, but don't trust PFF just because they get fancy NBC graphics, because, I mean, hey, they're a very well-run business. They've earned that, but don't trust it just because they say it.
Cole Schrott, 2923. What's up, boys? How about Tyler Bray last night?
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Are you proud of that? Because Tyler Thigpen would do more than just throw a check down.
I'm sorry, Tyler Bray had 12% of the Bears' yardage in that game. I don't know what you're talking about. In 30 seconds.
On a check down with 50 seconds that killed 20-plus seconds of clock.
It's not my fault the man didn't run out of bounds. Score. My goodness. You guys are putting an awful lot on Tyler Bray here.
Okay. All right. Well, that's your opinion.
I mean, look, it's improvement. The last time he saw the field, he lost the lead and they had to replace him. This time, he didn't lose the lead. I mean, granted, he couldn't have lost the lead, but he did it. So this is progress.
All right. Let's answer Cole's question. How about that? What is Tim Ward's best attribute? What type of defensive end is he? And what would he bring if he got snaps? Tim Ward's best attributes: length, Steve Spagnuolo size, good effort. A lot of room to grow beyond that. Did not know what he was doing with his hands. I don't think he's a particularly bendy player, so he's going to have to win with power at the next level. He's a guy that they took a swing on with the size, with the profile. So I don't think you really can expect too much out of him. But I mean, he fits what Steve Spagnuolo wants. Good effort, pretty good athletic profile, good size. I mean, let's see what they've done with it. But there's a lot of questions about him because we haven't seen him. He hasn't played a single snap in preseason football either last year. You gotta understand that. Like he got a complete redshirt last year. The only things that we've seen from him is Old Dominion, and his Old Dominion tape is not NFL caliber necessarily. He's got a lot of room to grow. Derek Vreeland, how much of a difference will the return of L'Jarius Sneed make to the effectiveness of the secondary? Shmurda also kind of asked if he'll start, what he'll play, what kind of position he'll play, where he'll play in the secondary, those kind of things.
I do think that he's going to play on the boundary. Although it's not to say that he can't play in that slot role. We've seen, you know, we've talked about his time at Louisiana Tech, his ability to play safety. That's kind of why he was lower on some people's boards. He can kind of do a little bit of everything. But as we saw in the beginning weeks of this season, his ball skills, his speed, and his length are problems for receivers on the boundary. That's going to go triple for a Raiders wide receiver group that does have some speed. Henry Ruggs is a very fast player. Brian Edwards is a very physical player. You got a group of guys that likes to go up and get the ball. Darren Waller's going to be out there against a corner as well. You want your length, your speed, and your dynamic guys on the outside. I think that that best suits L'Jarius Sneed. Now, I don't know what that means. I don't know if they're going to try and kick a guy like Bashaud Breeland, who has played in the slot before. He played there in Green Bay 2 years ago. They're going to try and kick him inside, or if there's just a straight swap for a guy like Charvarius Ward on the outside, which I wouldn't necessarily do, because I think Ward's physicality actually translates really well to the next couple weeks. We'll see what happens here, but I do expect he's going to come in. I think he's going to start, or at least be in heavy rotation on the outside there, because I think he's a really, really, really good matchup for this Raiders team, and I think he's going to come up with a couple of big plays. You're going to see an immediate impact.
I hope that he gets to come in and earn a lot of playing time, whether starting or just being heavily rotated as early as this week, but as soon as he's kind of game ready. Because what I think putting Sneed out there does is it allows your defensive coverage shells to just play a little different. You finally have a guy that isn't at threat to get just simply outrun every single rep. When you have Charvarius Ward and Bashaud Breeland or even Rashad Fenton as your outside corners, on either side of the field, on any given rep, there is a chance that they miss a press or they get caught slightly flat-footed and just simply get outran even by relatively average speed wide receivers. With L'Jarius Sneed, that's kind of out of the way. You don't have to worry that he's just going to get outran. Yeah, he can still get beat deep, but he has the speed that you don't have to provide safety help all the time. Putting him on the field against a team like the Raiders that have Nelson Aguilar, who's been a relatively good deep threat this year, that have Henry Ruggs, you just trust him to cover them vertically. You don't have to put safety help over the top consistently. I think it makes playing kind of that challenging Derek Carr to throw vertically a little bit easier when you have his speed out there. And I think that goes for every single game. I do think the Chiefs secondary lost a little bit of what they wanted to do with the safeties when he went down, because you have to start protecting the corners a little bit more.
Benny J 86, who is your second half of the season breakout player not named Mahomes or Kelsey?
Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think that the Chiefs have been purposefully keeping his workload a little bit lower. I think they have purposefully gone out of their way to not design too much for him as a receiver. I would have liked to have seen more, but I think that they are saving specific stuff with him, and especially touches. I think it might not be until the last 3-4 weeks of the season, but I think you will see a pretty good uptick in his usage or his type of usage, and then coinciding with that, his effectiveness. I do think you were going to have multiple weeks this back half of the season going into the playoffs where Clyde Edwards-Helaire kind of plays a really key role and how when this offense gets rolling.
I'm going to take the easy one. L'Jarius Sneed. He's going to come in. I think he's going to make a significant impact, much like he did at the beginning of this year. I don't think that anything has really changed for him. I think he's going to come in and be able to play at a ridiculously high level. His best attributes are still going to be there. This injury is not going to slow him down, and I think he's going to make a significant impact on a good, an already good Chiefs pass defense. They've got some serious opponents coming up here that love to throw the ball. I expect L'Jarius Sneed to put his stamp on the rest of the season.
I'm going to go with another rookie, and it kind of feels like just full on, just kind of feels like bye week late in the season, getting to come back from that. It always is a good refresh for these rookies, and then they come back and teams have a different plan for them. They have maybe they're going to add a little bit more, and I think you could see that potentially with Willie Gay. I'm going to go with Willie Gay on this. I think so. We're gonna all go with rookies here, but you know, Willie Gay, you know, he's gotten a little bit more opportunity than he did with the beginning of the season. I could see the Chiefs evaluating their football team and deciding to let him make some more mistakes playing on the field. And if that's the case, you know, there might be some more mistakes just coming along. But I think by the end of the year, I think you could see a really strong, you know, end of the season from the Mississippi State linebacker. One quick thing. This is just like a little mini rant. Everyone, we wrote that article about team needs. And look, linebacker, yes. I understand everybody thinks linebacker's the number one need on this football team. Anthony Hitchens isn't going anywhere, and Willie Gay is going to get opportunities to be the second highest snap total at the linebacker position. So you're going to be looking for a third linebacker that is not going to see the field nearly as much as those two. Those two are firmly entrenched in 2021 as your linebackers. You may not like it, but it's get over it. I don't know why you spend a high pick on a guy that's going to play the third most snaps at the linebacker position, the running back of the defensive
side of the football. Don't you be dissing Micah Parsons and Dylan Moses and all these fellas that I want on my football team.
Linebackers don't matter. Jeff Pars, if we just pretend Turk Wharton is our second round pick and Willie Gay is the undrafted free agent, does it make his usage more tolerable? When do we stop using the excuse that he's learning the playbook for more playing time? What a transition.
When he learns the playbook and gets more playing time. I mean, it is what it is right now. That's what those coaches have been telling you all season long. You watch him. He's a little bit lost with some of the things. You watch Anthony Hitchens having to tell him where to line up. He's not the only one. That's not saying that he's having to sit there and hold just Willie Gay's hand, but when Willie's on the field, he's having to do an awful lot of coaching. It limits Anthony Hitchens when you're having to have him basically hold Willie's hand the entire time. I still want him on the field. Let him learn trial by fire, but that's obviously not what the coaching staff feels like. I wish they would. Turk Wharton is good. Turk Wharton is not necessarily second round good. I mean, he looks good. Part of the reason why we love him so much is because he's a UDFA and he's going to be on this roster for the entirety of his UDFA contract. Like, he's already shown enough to where he's worth the, you know, whatever amount of money they gave him. They could have spent an asset on him and it would have been just fine because he's making an impact. We love the effort. We love what he does. There's a guy right there the coaching staff has told you he's in his playbook. That's why he's on the field. So I think you're going to see a lot more dime reps as they get, you know, Pinnell, Naughty in the game a lot more. You're seeing a lot more base heavy stuff. Turk Wharton snaps will go down a little bit, but he's making the most out of him because he's a good pass rusher.
This happens a lot, and like I'm geeked out about Tershawn Wharton, an undrafted free agent that the Chiefs found as a rotational player, but I wouldn't take a pick him in the second round. There is a defined role for him and it's not second round value. We all love Tershawn Wharton. We're geeked about him being on this football team. It's just he has a specific role that the Chiefs have that, you know, he's under club control for the next few years. And you know, that's why we're excited about him. But it's kind of weird. It's like you get excited about players, but maybe like second round is like, that's a big pick. And Tershawn Wharton's not up to that. He's still a rotational defensive lineman with a very defined set of skills. Ball game 21-32. The Raiders defense has not been as pathetic as years past. We saw them getting multiple pressures last game without blitzing much. How do you see Andy countering? I would say a trademark screen game, but without blitzing, I am not sure that's the answer. I don't think that the screen game is necessarily the answer for this. You do it with ultra-aggressive defenses. Honestly, a lot of what the Chiefs did the last time is going to work. There's just some execution. If they execute a little bit better, if Mahomes doesn't drift in the pocket some, if they protect a little bit better, they're going to score 50 instead of the 34 that they scored. The Chiefs, the Raiders didn't beat the Chiefs. The Chiefs beat the Chiefs. They're gonna move the ball without any problems whatsoever, and it's gonna be embarrassing. And Patrick Mahomes is gonna throw some shade at the Raiders on national television, and he's gonna throw like 6 touchdowns, and it's still gonna be like, should Kyler Murray be the MVP? Neil Geisler, Derek Carr sacks and picks this week, over under 2. Wow, that's very low bar. Give me the over. 2 sacks and 2 picks. I'm taking a push on both. Let's go.
I mean, I'm going to go over as well. Derek Carr to date averages just over a pick every game that he plays the Chiefs, and then you're going to have a next level, you know, an amplified situation here. He's taken 33 sacks against the Chiefs. 33 in 13 games. I'm going over on both.
I think it's a pretty easy over when you combine the two. I think there is zero chance that you get out of this game without Derek Carr getting sacked and throwing an interception combined twice. There's just no chance. He is more likely to get sacked twice and throw 2 interceptions than he is to have less than 2 combined.
Derek Carr tears over under 2.
Over.
Hammering it. Shout out to Bully Salt, who Maddie frankly kind of dunked on about his Max Crosby question.
Bully Salt, I want to say, I did not know this question was coming. I did not know a Max Crosby question was coming. I will say that he should have been drafted higher than he was, but I still have doubts that he can beat any blocker one-on-one.
Love you, Molly. Andrew Nagel asks, is there any underachieving player the Chiefs need to play his best more than Frank Clark for the rest of the season? He's not been bad, but he's not been $100 million good either.
I mean, yeah, I think we all agree with that. And Maddie has been talking a lot about it recently as well. Frank gets a lot of attention, sure, and he's not done enough with his one-on-one reps, frankly. I mean, he has little streaks. He has matchups that things go well for him, but it's not been as consistent as we'd hoped when he started this season, because he looked like the player that he finished the season in the playoffs, the guy that was just dominant and was wrecking game plans. The start of the season, that was the case. It has not been the case since. I don't know what's going on with him. It's not necessarily a super focus on stopping him that, you know, it was at the beginning of last year when he was playing hurt. Now teams are isolating him. And he's not winning those matchups. He's got to step up. This is a prime game for it. A guy like Derek Carr that wants to get the ball out quick, that hates being hit, that hates being pressured. If you make him have to, you know, pay attention to his blind spot at all, then he's going to be inaccurate. You're going to see him throw picks. You're going to see the Derek Carr that we all know and love as Chiefs fans. Frank Clark can start the season, you know, start it right back up here, finish strong, and still be well worth every bit of the money that he is. I mean, I hate talking about money that way, but yeah, he hasn't played up to what our standards for him are.
It's essentially been since that first Raiders game that Frank Clark's kind of gone from this guy that was relatively dominant to start the year, whether it was just as a, or not just, but as a run defender and then as a pass rusher, especially in situations where you knew the opposing team had to drop back to pass, he had been really good. That Raiders game came along, he didn't do hardly anything in that game, and since then, he's just had a hard time getting back on track as a pass rusher. I do think that you saw some situations this past week versus the Panthers where he was able to turn in, you know, back-to-back good reps. I don't think he's been quite as bad as the narrative is as a pass rusher, but it hasn't been good. It definitely has not been good. He's not winning quickly. He's kind of resorted back to only being a speed rusher, which is how he played last season when he was dealing with some injuries, and that's just not his game. He has the ability to win with speed, but that's not when he's at his best, when he's trying to funnel everything through his kind of speed and rip. So I don't know what's going on with that. I do hope that it gets better. I am looking forward to him getting better, maybe coming out of the bye week. Maybe he's feeling a little bit healthier. The good news, though, is Frank Clark, even not playing at his best, still gives you one of the best run-defending defensive ends in the NFL, and teams still treat him as such. He has some bad reps in there, not as many good reps as he had to start the year, but overall, he's still one of the best run-defending edge players in the NFL, and that's at his worst. So you do have a very high floor, and the ceiling, as we've seen in the playoffs or to start this year, has been just as high.
Shout out HunterAir115 who asked about Yasir Durant. We've answered that in the last week. And I'm very happy Yasir Durant's here. I'm very intrigued by him. He might ultimately move to guard. But he held his own at tackle for an undrafted free agent guy getting his first reps and getting thrown into the fire in the middle of a game. There's something there, definitely. And I'm excited that he's a part of this football team moving forward. Sean W. Nienau asks, love the podcast, and I want to know how good is this Raiders defense? Stats-wise, they don't perform. When I watch, they seem to just get it done. Am I just messing with my own head?
No, you're not messing with your own head. It just depends on what games you've watched. I mean, like, you look at the teams that they've played. They played some bad teams. Like, I mean, they played the Broncos recently, and the Broncos can't get out of their own way. Drew Locke was awful. Couldn't hit a wide open receiver if he had to this past
weekend.
You hate
to see it.
I mean, if Drew Locke is even remotely accurate, then that game is not the way that it is. But I mean, like, the Browns a couple weeks prior was just an absolute terrible game. Weather-wise, it was just a gross game overall. But the rest of the time, like, the Bucks put up 45 points on 454 yards on them. I mean, the Chiefs put up, you know, 413 yards and 32 points on them. Like, you see the good teams that they play. Heck, the Patriots even scored 36 on them with 400 total yards. These teams that are decent, that execute well, will just score at will on this Raiders team. Yes, the Chiefs offense shot itself in the foot in the second half of that game against the Raiders, but that was their own doing. That was something that they did not execute properly. I don't think it's anything that the Raiders defense is doing particularly well outside of some decent rushes every once in a while. That's realistically the only spot that they've been any sort of good. The secondary's gross. The linebackers are gross. I think that a good team takes advantage of them and could just hang points at will.
The Raiders defense has holes on the front line, the defensive line, at linebacker, and in the secondary. They don't really have playmakers. They don't have, when you got to point to one defensive player on their team that is top five, top 10 at their position, you're going to be struggling to do so. So no, it's not a good defense. I do think they're pretty well coached. I do think they play with a lot of energy. They do play with a little bit of an edge. A lot of that is Kent's favorite, Jonathan Abram. A lot of that is the coaching staff coming from John Gruden. Like, they try really, really hard on defense. They are going to give it their all. They did a fantastic job adjusting to the Chiefs at halftime. The Chiefs did shoot themselves in the foot, but they did a good job changing over what they were doing. But in terms of talent for talent, or even scheme for scheme, this defense is definitely not ready yet to be a big player in the NFL. And I do think you see that when you watch them for a whole game against non-bad offenses. They're trending the right direction, but they're not ready yet, I don't think, to hang with the big boys in the NFL.
All right, that is going to do it for the mailbag edition of the AP Laboratory. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back to preview Sunday night football against the Las Vegas Raiders. We'll catch you later.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Support for this show comes from Pendo. Pendo improves the apps your customers and employees rely on. Whether you're building applications for customers or managing applications for employees, Pendo can help deliver better experiences for your users so they can get more value from your software. Pendo also provides AI-powered product analytics that fuel in-app guides to deliver personalized guidance to customers directly inside your app. Visit pendo.io/podcast to learn more about how your team can use Pendo to start building better digital experiences. There, you can also check out Pendo's lineup of free certification courses, 12 hours of in-depth training for your product management teams on topics from AI to product analytics to product-led growth. That's pendo.io/podcast to learn more.